the Mercury Lounge, 8 p.m. The Rockwood Music Hall welcomes Zane Carney, 9 p.m. Stage 2. Looking ahead to Wednesday, March 12th, Marcy Geller will be at the Cafe Portofino in Northport, 7 p.m.
Hi, I'm Masapan, and this is WSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM. Hear your reggae online at WSB.fm and mobile through your TuneIn app.
And the time is 3 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's time once again for Off the Wall. Thank you. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. This is Manuel Goldstein, joining you here on this Tuesday evening. With a promise that tonight we will definitely take phone calls, if there are any phone calls to take, that is. Write down a number for future reference. We'll be taking calls in, 10, 15 minutes? Let's start early this week so that we don't have a last-minute rush. The number is country code 1, of course. 631-632-6901. Again, 631-632-6901. And we'd like to hear your thoughts when we open up the phone lines on what's been going on. It's been a while. And what a week it's been. And continues to be. I was thinking on the way over here, what is the biggest thing that I've ever misplaced, that I've lost? You know, tangible, not things like mental health and consciousness and morality and that kind of thing. No, physical objects. And, you know, I'm hard-pressed. I forgot where I parked my car once. It's not really losing your car, though, is it? I mean, yeah, I guess it is. But until I found it, it was lost. But it was a mall, you know? It's 10,000 cars, and if you don't have one of those things that beeps, or in the old days, people used to have, like, flowers they'd stick on top of the antennas that... I guess people don't have those anymore, either. The big antennas that go way up in the air because... Well, antennas are smaller and people listen to satellite radio and or iPods or whatnot. But no, I did misplace my car once. And I'm trying to think, what is possibly the biggest thing that somebody could misplace? A house? No, a house is going to stay where it is. Well, I guess a mobile house, you could misplace that. Shipments of things, they get lost, but usually that's the fault of FedEx or UPS or definitely the post office. Okay, yeah, a bunch of things got lost that way, but I didn't lose them. Honestly, nothing really comes to mind that's that big. So it's hard to imagine how Malaysia can lose an airplane, a jetliner, a 777. But they seem to have done just that. This is an incredible story. It's incredible for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that this really has never happened before. There was that flight that went from Brazil to France that disappeared over the Atlantic Ocean, but they did have some contact, some idea that something went wrong without knowing exactly what it was that went wrong. And within, I believe, 4 or 5 days, which is where we are now with this particular mystery, they found debris, and they found it in the Atlantic Ocean, which is a hell of a lot bigger than where they're searching right now, in South China Sea or Gulf of Thailand. Where are they exactly? They're all over the place, but they're smaller bodies of water. But what came out today was really kind of amazing. They discovered, and this is something I also don't understand, they discovered that the plane had turned around and was heading at a perpendicular angle from where it was supposed to be going. It was supposed to be going north towards Beijing from Kuala Lumpur. And for some reason, it made a left-hand turn. But they didn't reveal that until today. Yeah, it's a bit of important information there. Military radar data shows that the Malaysia Airlines jet that disappeared last week flew hundreds of miles off course after a civilian systems last recorded the plane's location. The Malaysian military radar indicates Flight 370 flew at least as far as the Malacca Strait west of Malaysia. And that's according to Air Force Chief General, Radzel Daud, I believe. And after that, the signal from the plane was lost, he said. The primary focus of the search previously had been off the eastern coast of Malaysia and Vietnam, based on where air controllers lost track of the Boeing 777. Malaysian authorities have said the plane's electronic signaling transponder apparently stopped working at about the time civilian flight controllers lost contact with it near the coast of Vietnam. Now, Dowd said Malaysian Air Force radar data shows the track of the plane then turning sharply and eventually flying over the island of Pulau Perak, hundreds of miles off course. So, this would have been handy information to have from the beginning, don't you think? And how is it? This is something I really cannot get my head around. How is it that the Malaysian military authorities either didn't have access to this information or didn't see fit to share this information with the public, with the people searching? And I haven't seen that question asked anywhere, which kind of bugs me too. It seems to me, you know, you have something that big, all kinds of things can happen, but losing it completely? I mean, I'm trying not to be tracked. It's a constant battle. Every little device that I have wants to track me, whether it's my computer or my phone or the various accounts I have with stores and just a lot of nosy people, too, that just want to know everything. So how is it that this massive jetliner can just be plucked out of the sky and there were no records? there are no GPS coordinates, no radar, until this information is released days later. Awfully weird. And I just, there seems like there should be a better way to keep track of these things, rather than just a periodic ping every now and then to see, oh, okay, you're still alive, you're still here. What about an open channel that is always open? And that as soon as it closes, you know exactly where it closed. Whether it be to a satellite, a Skype connection, who knows? But surely the technology exists for that. It just seems awfully weird. The body of water wasn't that big. It seems awfully weird that that can just disappear. And there's so little clue as to where it disappeared or what happened. A mystery like this is unprecedented. And that leads me to my next theory. Well, why not? Everybody else has a theory. I've got a theory. We're talking about this airline. Everyone's talking about this airliner. Turn on all the news channels. Everybody's got their theories, their experts, their reenactments, their history. It's just round the clock. What aren't we talking about? That's right. What we were talking about last week, the whole Crimea situation. You know, Ukraine and Russia getting into it over Crimea and a referendum coming up next Sunday. We're not talking about that anymore because this is a lot more interesting. This is something that, wow, this is the X-Files material here. Plane just plucked out of the sky. What could possibly cause that? I don't know. Let's banter on about it with absolutely no information whatsoever and fill the time that way. Gets people glued to the TV sets, doesn't it? That Crimea stuff, that'll work out, you know? We talked about that last week. Why should we continue worrying about it? And you know what? While we're not talking about it, it's just going to happen. Crimea is just going to be part of the Russian Empire once more. Whether or not that's the way it should be or not, that's not the point. The point is that it's happening, whether we're watching it or not. Last week we were watching it. This week we're not. I just looked at Google News on this computer here. It's not even on the page at all. There's no story about Crimea. There's a bunch of stories about Justin Bieber, but no stories about Crimea. It's been forgotten. It's been forgotten. I maintain these two items are not unrelated. Now let's think about this. Who benefits from having this story erased from the headlines? And what better way to have the story erased than to have a massive mystery that we all are theorizing about, all trading stories and thoughts and experiences? Now, I'm not saying that Vladimir Putin engineered the disappearance of this plane from the start, but it does seem like he is the person who benefits from this the most. So that is where I would turn the investigation right now, to the highest authorities in the Russian government, to see what they know about this missing plane, where they're hiding it. And to look into that, you know, I bet as soon as these elections are over on Sunday, all of a sudden the plane's going to mysteriously appear. Oh, yeah, we were late. We got sidetracked. It's a theory, all right? It's as good a theory as anything else out there right now. And when two things like this coincide, you got to think maybe it's more than just a coincidence. But don't listen to me. Don't listen to me. What do I know? Well, I'd look into this. I'd ask some of those 9/11 truthers too, because they always seem to know what's going on. All right, they've got a hand in this somehow. Those people know a lot more than what they're saying. But yeah, it's a mystery, all right. And we're gonna keep an eye open during this show because dawn is breaking over there in that part of the world right now, With this new information that the Malaysian military just saw fit to share with everybody else, that gives the searchers a new area to look at. And you know, I keep hoping that something miraculous will happen, because all these stories always end the same way, and it's horrible to see, because we've all been in that situation, most of us anyway, of being on an airplane and completely at the mercy of whatever is going on up in the cockpit. And apparently there were some untoward things going on in the cockpit in previous flights with the same crew. Basically, there's one passenger who has popped up who claims that the first officer had a habit of inviting people he didn't know into the cockpit of the plane during international flights. This woman has told a program in Australia called A Current Affair, which must be at least as crappy as the one we have over here, that this particular first officer had a habit of inviting people up to the front and letting them sit in the cockpit during a flight. Yeah, the pilots entertained their guests during the flight, at one point commenting on one teen's nail polish. She says, the person giving this information, "I don't think there was an instance where I felt threatened or I felt that they didn't know what they were doing. They were very friendly, but I felt that they were very competent in what they were doing." Well, that's a good thing, I guess, right? So, yeah, it's unusual. It's illegal in the United States to do that, so don't think about asking. And it might be completely irrelevant here. But everything has to be looked at, including those fake passports. That was a big deal for a little while, until this morning there was an Interpol news conference where they pretty much said that, yeah, you know what, these were two Iranian guys who bought stolen passports in Thailand and were using them to try and immigrate to Europe. I guess what they're using as evidence of this is that they had booked a flight together to Beijing, and then from there they were going on to two different cities in Europe, one Copenhagen, one Frankfurt, I believe, and that one of their mothers was expecting them in one of those cities. So all of that added together didn't make it seem like they were actual terrorists. They seemed to have a plan of a different nature, still not a legal plan, but a plan. But of course, discounting terrorism is probably premature at this point, because not knowing what happened, anything could happen. We're not discounting Putin. We're not discounting space aliens. We're not discounting anything. But wouldn't it be amazing if it actually landed someplace, an uninhabited island, and somehow there were survivors? It would be just like the TV series Lost, absolutely. But hopefully with a less weird outcome. But yeah, in all likelihood, that's not what happened. In all likelihood, it's the same as every other instance where this kind of thing happens. But boy, is it weird. I also noticed that the folks at Interpol were mentioning that there have been over a billion, yes, a billion instances of people using fake passports. I don't know how they know this, if they're fake passports, but that's what they're claiming. And they're saying, yeah, this is a massive security problem. That's because this flight might not have been terrorist-related. It's still a problem. And a reason why we have to crack down even more. To me, if there have been a billion cases of this over whatever period of time they're measuring, and there haven't been any instances of terrorism as a result of that, it doesn't seem like that much of a problem to me. And not much of an excuse to crack down even further. At least not for the scare tactics that they're trying to sell. So watch out for that. Watch out for the fear-mongering that's going to be peddled no matter what the outcome is. They're very good at this. All right, so back to Crimea. Yeah, it's happening. It's the vote is happening this Sunday, because that's when elections tend to happen in other parts of the world. It makes sense. It's when people aren't at work usually. It's basically a full day where people can get to the polls. Not how we do it, obviously, but it's how a lot of others do it in the rest of the world. And that's what's happening in Crimea. They are voting on a referendum about whether or not to join Russia. And everyone in the West is saying this is an illegal referendum. The results are not going to be binding. Meanwhile, those people who believe that the president, Yanukovych, who was ousted in Ukraine, he was ousted illegally. I'm sorry about that chime. He was ousted illegally. And the election that Ukraine is having later on, that's going to be illegal. So basically, everyone is saying that everyone else's elections are illegal and not binding, and they're not recognizing anybody. So everyone's pretty much saying the same thing. They're just saying it about different things. So if we can kind of align it somehow, that would make things probably a lot easier to work out. Hi, Frank.
Hey.
What's up? Are we off the air again?
What?
Are we off the air again?
No, we're on the air. We're fully on the air.
Yeah, take a microphone. There.
Oh, where are we here?
No, you're going to burst in. You're going to update people as to what's going on.
We're on the air, and I'm just checking on some electrical work they were doing today.
Electrical work here?
Yeah, in this building, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Making a mess, but they're not done yet, so I'll give them that.
Is it related to the disappearance of the flight?
Well, you know what? I never really thought about that.
Well, people aren't making connections between different things, and I think that's
the problem. We unplugged something on that day.
Really? Again?
Yeah, it was a big, green plug, and we thought we didn't need it, and we unplugged
it. Not supposed to do that. Don't unplug things. All right.
And then all the runway lights went out. <It's>
like, all right, that'll be the investigators on line 3.
You must remember that movie, right?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I remember everything.
Yeah. First came the dinosaurs.
How are you voting in the Crimea referendum?
We
do get to vote. Did you know that? People don't realize
that.
Yeah, Americans get to vote on this.
I would like to see what the people there want. It sounds like Crimea wants to go with Russia, and the rest of Ukraine wants to go with the EU.
Yeah, that does
so
seem that way.
So what's the problem with that?
I don't know. I'm not sure I understand it. I mean, if we had, say, a state in this country, I don't know, let's call it Arizona, let's call it Texas, let's call it Florida, one of those.
Okay.
And they were filled with people that didn't like the rest of the country, didn't like where the country was going, and wanted to be a different country. Who here would have a problem with that, you know?
Well, the media would,
Why?
Not this media, but...
Yeah, I mean, go ahead. Have fun. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Didn't Vermont want to do that?
Really? They want to do that?
Well, Vermont used to be in New York. We're the same state, right? And Vermont broke off from New York.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
Really? When did that happen?
I don't know. A long time ago,
Vermont and New York were the same. Well, what did they call it?
I don't know, New York, I think. Vermont broke off. I remember reading something about that in history. Just have to look it up.
You spend time in Vermont, so I believe that you know what you're talking about here, but I never heard that.
Yeah, and they seceded from New York. But,
you know, there's probably Dutch people out there who know this, but I don't know this. It's my own damn country.
Yeah.
For all I know, Vermont was one of the 13 founding colonies, but it probably wasn't.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right.
Yeah, but they took that little river, that, you know, the little tiny river there that divided them and said, okay.
I don't even know the name of that. Is that the Hudson River?
Yeah, yeah. We'll take this half up to the Connecticut River, and you know, New Hampshire was always New Hampshire.
All right. New Hampshire was always... Why? They're basically the same. They're right next to each other.
Well,
the same
New Hampshire, width. New York, you know, Vermont is new what? It's new. It's newer.
Well, they should have called it something that wasn't unique like that.
Well, like Green Mountains. What does Vermont stand for?
Connecticut wasn't new anything. Rhode Island wasn't new anything.
I don't know how they came up with Connecticut. I guess that was an Indian name. I don't know.
Usually that's what we name things after, the Indians that were massacred.
Vermont means green mountain.
All right, so
they have them.
Yeah, I hope Vermont doesn't. Yeah. Well, are they going to become their own country, or are they going to join Canada?
No, they would be their own.
So you'd have this massive country called the United States. You'd have a massive country on top of that called Canada. You have this little sliver called Vermont.
Yeah.
That was going to be a country.
Yeah, why not?
I'm all for it.
Yeah, it
you
probably
know?
Won't happen.
The separatist movements amaze me, to be honest. But I think, though, that in the case of Crimea, if the people want that. But the question is, do the people really want that? It seems like they do. And because the reason I say that is not so much because of what we're seeing today with, you know, troops moving in and propaganda flying left and right, but looking at the past, looking at the fact that a year ago people were saying, 10 years ago people were saying that the people in Crimea, the people in the eastern part of the country, don't feel the same way about the EU as the people in the western part of the country. In fact, there's a river going down the middle of Ukraine that pretty much divides it into east and west, which I think would be a dandy border to separate the two sides. And I don't understand why people in the west want the people in the east to be weighing them down. They will be losing at least 1 million pro-Russian voters in this election coming up in the Ukraine. In Ukraine. You're not supposed to call it the Ukraine. That was when it was the Soviet Union. I don't understand it. Unless it's, and it probably is, a purely strategic thing about having access to the North Sea fleet, you know, and water and things like that.
Well, that's where treaties and agreements come into place. And, you know, rather have that than fighting. You know, it can be prevented from being a civil war, which is what it looks like it could become.
Fortunately, that hasn't happened yet.
Certain powers are adamant that, you know, no, we want this land or we don't want, you know, it's very, you know,
it just it just seemed pretty obvious to me something like that was going to happen as soon as the government in Ukraine was toppled. It's, you know, obviously that part of the country didn't feel the same way. That's why there weren't demonstrations over there during this whole crisis.
Right. And they're Russian-speaking, too. So
The majority is Russian. Right. I do think a vote to split should be at least, you know, a two-thirds vote. That's just my feeling. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be just a simple majority. But I think they will probably get that as well.
I hope that works out and nobody gets hurt.
that's something that's good so far is that shots have been fired, but nobody has been hit by those shots.
Yeah.
I think if we didn't take such a bullheaded stand against it, I mean, people are saying, this is how Nazi Germany started, you know, but, you know,
not the same thing.
Germany also started with the sun coming up one day. It's, you know, just because the same thing happens and a country, you know, the United States has done the same thing. We've taken over land. We've expanded. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the same. I don't think Vladimir Putin is Hitler.
No.
It doesn't seem the same. He's evil in other ways. And certainly clamps down on people in an uncompromising manner, in a very unfortunate manner.
But we're in a totally different era right now. I mean, the communication, the internet, the way that we get information. You can't hide anything. You can't have the propaganda that Nazi Germany had, you know.
Oh, but you could still have Holocaust. You could still have genocide.
You could still have it, but it's a lot harder with the ability to disseminate. A person on the ground can have a phone and get a video out and be able to decide. You couldn't do that back then.
True.
And now the truth can come out. I mean, there can still be suppression, but I think it's a lot harder for that side to make that happen.
The genocide will be on YouTube.
That's right.
That's a great man once said that.
Right.
So, it's coming up on Sunday. I do think there's a connection between this missing plane and the Crimea, because we're not talking about the Crimea anymore.
Right, it fell off the radar.
Yeah, it's a good point. It fell off the radar.
Crimea fell off the radar.
Absolutely.
And so did the plane. But.
Hey, I'm going to go into delay because
yeah,
I want to take phone calls.
Yeah, delay, and I have to move on to do more, you know, I have to unplug more things.
Don't unplug anything
I'll try
else,
not to unplug
Frank, please, because every time you unplug something, something
so
happens
something falls
in a different part of the world that's unfortunate. And
I'll try not to do that.
This place has a lot of control that we don't know about, we don't understand yet.
Yeah. Okay, well, if I keep unplugging things, I might get grounded, so I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, we don't want to ground you again, Frank. Remember last time.
Good
All right, here's Chief Engineer Frank stopping in. All right, yeah, we're going into delay right now in a hurry. And here's a message from a special person to get us there. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Stony Brook President Sam Stanley, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, the station to study by.
And we are back in delay, and I have to make sure we made it into delay properly and that we don't sound too horrible.
And we are
all right, we can live with that. Our phone number, 631-632-6901. As promised, we're taking phone calls, and we'll take as many phone calls as come in the next, 25 minutes? Yeah, we have a lot of time. Do we have a lot of listeners? We've been talking about all kinds of happenings in the world, but there's other things as well, if you want to bring that up. Feel free to call us and let us know what is on your mind. 631-632-6901. We'll accept calls from anywhere in the world. Maybe you're in Vermont. Maybe you can explain that whole separatist movement over there. Maybe you're in Crimea. Maybe you're in, Finland. All sorts of places. I know people listen. Sometimes people listen on the podcast, which means they might not listen to us live. But I do know a number of people do listen live. So we're speaking to you right now. 631-632-6901. Please share your thoughts. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, Emmanuel. This is Bobson.
Bobson, how did I know it would be you?
I don't know. You saw the number coming from a 359 area code, maybe?
No, we don't have caller ID here.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so there's no way we know who you are. We just, you know, we have pretty good guesses, but it's been a while. It's been a while since we've heard your voice. What's going on?
Well, finally on March 9th, we had snow this winter in Sofia, so it's...
Really? Bulgaria didn't have snow until 2 days ago?
Well, there was some in January, maybe, but nothing lasting.
I'm sorry to hear that. I think we've had all your snow here, because...
yeah, I heard about that, too.
Yeah, we've been pretty much covered from mid-January till now. It's been very warm, and it's melting, but it's still there.
Yeah, well, fun is being had, I hope.
So now, okay, you're over there in Eastern Europe. Tell us, you know, you must have had a lot more experience with this whole Ukraine-Crimea thing, maybe perspective that we don't get here in America.
Oh, it's a bit very good thing happening over there. I don't know. I'm not very familiar with their history or what they had to do with each other back. I've heard of the Crimean War between the British Empire and the Russian Empire, 150 years ago, something like that. But
a while back, yes. I mean, Crimea has been part of Russia for a very, very long time, since at least the 1700s, and there's been a lot of influence throughout history there. It was only given to the Ukraine as some kind of bureaucratic transfer in the days of the Soviet Union, when Ukraine was part of the same country as Russia. It didn't really make any difference. There wasn't a movement.
It was given to the Ukraine by Khrushchev, who was born in the Ukraine or some such thing. I'm not sure.
I can't really find any reason why he did that. Everyone says, yeah, this happened in 1956, but nobody seems to understand why. But one thing I do know, there wasn't a bunch of riots in the street or a revolution going on or anything like that. It was, as he said, it was a gift. It was a gift to Ukraine. Here, take the Crimea. And it didn't really change anything because they were still part of the
Russian
same...
Russian Black Sea naval fleet is housed in the Crimea, has been for years now.
Yes, that is true. And I can see why Russia would be a little concerned with a dramatic change in direction in the country housing their Black Sea fleet. Don't say we would not do the exact same thing if we felt that our interests...
Well, you know how there's an American Navy fleet which is housed in Bahrain?
Yes.
And the Bahrain... the news from Bahrain over the past few years has been... weird, shall we say. There's been various sorts of attempts to anyhow, but your government is very supportive of the Bahraini government as such, because the I think it's the fifth fleet, is it? Or one of those.
Okay.
They have a few Navy fleets, so I don't know which one is housed in Bahrain, but...
Well, you know, it's just, it's interesting to me to see the pundits on television talking with this shock that they believe that Russia is trying to influence the region. Of course they're trying to influence the region. It's their region. That's where they are. That's where they've been. They've been doing this for a long, long time. What's more strange is that the United States is trying to influence that region so far away. You know, that's,
well,
we just take these things for granted.
Oh, it's, I think we shall see. Have you been to the Ukraine?
Yes, Kyle and I were there, a couple of years ago, a couple of summers ago, and we went to Kiev and saw a couple of the demonstrations, the counter demonstrations right next to each other. We stood at Independence Square. It was we were actually there on the anniversary of the country's founding.
I was there last year in April.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was probably very different then.
Well, it was weird in a way, but too much of the Cold War leftover behavior, I should say, was there.
If you want that, go to Belarus. That's where the Cold War is in full effect.
No, I don't feel like going to Belarus.
Well, it makes you feel better about wherever it is you're going back to, because, yeah,
but I remember walking around the square with friends from England and various other places just 11 months ago, and it has been... sad to see what was going on over the past few months, but it hasn't been too much of a surprise for me, unfortunately, because of, you know,
mm-hmm.
what I saw there when I was there.
All right, well, Bobson, you sound tired, and I know it's late over there in Bulgaria right now. Any other thoughts that you want to share with us?
This year, that's off the wall, is going to be from the European point of view, because you people went to the summer daylight savings time already, and we still haven't.
Oh, is that what happened? So it's an hour later for you. Yeah, we're on daylight. I don't like that. I don't like daylight savings time this early. It doesn't feel right.
No, for us, your show is an hour earlier than usual.
Oh, it's an hour earlier. You know, I never get this right. Okay, so then you should be less tired.
Well, then I will be in an hour from now, probably.
Okay, all right, interesting. So what time is it there now?
It's somewhere between midnight and 1 a.m.
Okay, it's probably 12:43 a.m., I would say.
Three.
And when do you get daylight savings time?
I don't know.
All right.
I don't even bother with it. All the computers automatically switch it on.
Well, yeah, most of them do. You know, the one part that that has trouble, believe it or not, are the atomic clocks. I have clocks that get the signal. They're supposed to be accurate, but they don't get the signal, so they're still on standard time. And I have to basically stand on the roof and hold them up in the air at a particular time to get the signal. I don't understand why it's such a half-ass system that has such a weak signal that doesn't update the clocks, which are the one thing that should be updated.
Yeah, the computers do it automatically, and I don't bother switching anything I have in my pocket to it, because I don't think it's a good idea.
Well, a couple of years ago, I missed it, too, because everything changed, and I didn't even notice everything changed. And, yeah, I think that was interesting. Listen, we got another phone call. But good hearing from you, and we hope we see you later this year.
Well, we'll see about that. All right, have a great time.
All right, take care. And good evening, you're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, with Marcel de Jong from the Netherlands.
Netherlands, oh, we're in a European mood today. How are you doing?
Indeed. I'm doing fine. Yeah, I was just wanted to call in that it's the 23rd that we're going to get DST.
Oh, you're getting the 20th? Okay, is that all of Europe gets daylight savings time at the same time?
Pretty much, yeah.
I see, okay.
Night between the 22nd and the 23rd.
Uh-huh. So let me ask you, as a Dutch citizen, what's the perspective there on the whole Crimea thing?
It's scary actually for us a little bit. Well, yeah, we're a bit further away than where Bobson is, but it's pretty close by actually, and I was just saying on the IRC chat room about Crimea, say Canada invades New York with tanks and everything, and then they hold a referendum there on whether to have New York become a part of Canada. And yeah, how fair would that referendum actually be at that point?
I could see that. But let's say Canada already had a base in New York, and that base had a region around it filled with Canadians, and the Americans have an overthrow of government. Oh, this is a great fantasy. Americans have an overthrow of the government, and the very first thing that they do when they overthrow the government is ban or at least relegate the Canadian language to make it seem like the Canadians are going to be oppressed. The reason I say that is because that's exactly what happened in Ukraine. As soon as the government was toppled, what did they do? They passed a law that basically took away the protection that the Russian language had in the eastern part of the country. Now, the law was vetoed by the new leader, but the fact that they did that so quickly, and that was their first order of business, definitely made it seem like Russians were going to be in the crosshairs here, and they weren't going to be treated very nicely. So I could sort of understand why there was a reaction to that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I do understand it, but it's just scary.
Very
hotbed right now, and it's just... Yeah, we hope that it won't turn into a war, because that might just end up turn out into some nuclear winter or something.
Well, I'll tell you what's scary. I was watching some of the coverage of this, and mothers in Kiev are saying, "Yes, my son is enlisting right now." And people are hungry for war, and I'm just very, very grateful that when I look at the figures of what Ukraine has and what Russia has, that Ukraine is so dwarfed by Russia. If they were anywhere near equal, yes, there would be a war, and it would be a very bloody war. And that's something that we need to avoid at all costs, because this is really just a question of what government is ruling what particular bit of land. It seems a lot more important than it actually is. The important thing is to keep talking and to treat each other with respect, and hopefully that's something that will be remembered. But it's a very tense situation. But the other aspect to all this, I was listening to Fox News the other day because all the other news channels on my satellite radio were doing commercials, so I just figured I'd stumble on there. They were doing an interview, and I didn't know who they were interviewing at first. They kept saying Mr. Vice President, so I thought it was Biden. And Biden was ripping into President Obama, saying that he wasn't doing the right thing. And I realized this can't be Biden. Why would he be doing that? They were talking to Dick Cheney, and they just kept calling him Mr. Vice President because, well, it's radio and I couldn't see his face. And in Fox News' eyes, he probably still is the vice president. But basically, one of the things he was saying was that this is our opportunity to provide Europe with energy that is created through, what do you know, fracking. Yeah, this is how we basically continue offshore drilling and fracking and all these things that people are concerned about. But now it's going to become necessary. It's going to become something that we have to do to prevent this situation from hurting people in Europe. And I thought, wow, this is really probably what it's all about. I don't think the U.S. cares about Crimea, the people there, just like the people in South Ossetia and that other part of Georgia that was taken over by Russia. We don't care about that because it's not strategically located. So I think that's really what this is all about.
Money, I guess, for U.S. Companies. But indeed, Russia is a big provider of gas and of energy in Europe.
Yeah, that's true. And if we have some kind of an embargo, then, you're going to have to replace that somehow. And what better way to replace it than to than to pursue a policy here that's controversial but will soon become necessary. So the debate will just have to be put on hold.
Yeah, indeed. Well, the Netherlands does also provide gas for parts of Europe, but yeah, the province where it's found, it's currently in a bit of a state as well, because there have been a lot of earthquakes there because of the gas. Well, how do you call it? Retrieving it from the ground, and it's a difficult situation everywhere.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, just to the south of you is Belgium, and there was talk about Belgium splitting apart. Well, splitting in two. You guys have any thoughts on that?
For me, they'd be welcome back to the Netherlands, but at least the Flemish part of it. But yeah, that story has been going on for a very long time already. The Flemish people aren't happy with the Wallonian people and vice versa. So it's... that was one of the reasons why they didn't have a government for a very long time, almost a year, I think, that they were without a government.
See, this is something we don't have here. I don't know if it's something we could use to our advantage, but we just don't have these kinds of factions of different people. In the United States, it's pretty much all the same from coast to coast with, conservatives and liberals and differences in opinion like that. But it's not, you can't label it like, oh, the people that come from this particular background. I mean, we have racism. We gave that a go, but that's pretty much on its way out. You know, the kind of thing in Europe seems to last forever.
Well, yeah, but of course, Belgium, yeah, you do have the two main languages there, actually three, but German is a very small part of Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, French speaking and Dutch speaking, and yeah, the wealthiest part, I think, is the Dutch speaking part of Belgium, and then of course the Dutch speaking part of Belgium sees the French speaking part as basically just sitting back and just enjoying the fruits of the labor of the Flemish people. And it's just that's pretty much what I hear, but I only hear one side of the story.
I guess it is kind of similar in some ways here, because there is a lot of that attitude towards people who speak Spanish, and a fear that Spanish might take over. People will be speaking that. And what's the big deal? Yeah, you know, add Chinese into the mix. Speak the language of the people that you're speaking to, and maybe learn some of the other language, and I think we'll all be ahead somehow.
Let's all start speaking Esperanto or something.
Well, I mean, you guys, how many languages do you know, being a Dutch citizen?
I know, of course, English, Dutch, of course. I know a little bit I know enough to be dangerous in German, and a little bit of French.
You know, it's amazing, because people here barely can speak English without knowing any other language. I don't mean to put us down too much, but we really need to focus on other things. Recently, I've heard that in some schools, they've replaced the foreign language requirement with a computer language. In other words, you can take C++ instead of Spanish, and that counts as a language. This is real. I couldn't make this up.
No, that's just crazy. Yeah. In a way, it does make sense, because you don't really need it if you don't leave the country or anyway. But on the other side, you deprive yourself of such a rich culture.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're in a relatively small country surrounded by other countries that speak different languages. So you kind of have to learn other languages if you're going to communicate. We're here in this big, massive country where we're all the same. And the priority just isn't as high. And that's, I think, unfortunate. Hey, before we go, any theories as to where this plane is?
Well, that's another thing. You know that they're thinking of allowing GSMs and cell phones on the planes, right?
Yes. Well, that's another thing. Yes, I heard this earlier, that some of the phones belonging to passengers are ringing. So, my understanding is that if a phone rings before it goes to voicemail, there is a signal. And if it just goes to voicemail, then there is no signal, or it's turned off. So I'm not sure if this is being interpreted in the right way or reported in the right way, but people are saying that the phones are ringing. None of them are picking up, but they are ringing.
I do know that there's now a crowdsourcing effort. A company has released all their recent satellite imagery, and asking the internet basically to help them find locate the airplane. So that's at least something.
Well, looking in the wrong place certainly would be why they haven't found it yet. Since now the Malaysian military has seen fit to share this information, maybe they'll actually find it. I would imagine they'd find it today, or meaning tonight, when it's daytime over there, because now they have more accurate information. But if they don't find it, then who knows? This thing really could be anywhere. And maybe some of the theories that I broached earlier aren't so crazy after all. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. It could be even a new Bermuda Triangle, something like that.
Something like that. Hey, thanks for your call. Good hearing from you.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care.
Have a nice evening.
That's going to just about do it for us here tonight on Off the Wall. You can write to us, otw@2600.com is our email address. By the way, we're going to have a bunch of Dutch shows coming up, at least five that I know of that we're putting together from Kyle and my journey over there earlier, or actually last year. We've got that. We've got a bunch of other places as well. That'll be coming up when we're going someplace else, so that we'll have something to play while we're not here. You can write to us again, otw@2600.com. That's our email address. We'll see you next week. Picking up